Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Nooch, aka Indigenous Peoples Day. Well, if you'll bear with me, I'm a good reader. I'm not a very good public speaker, but there's a movement in Carbondale to reach out to the Nooch, the people. Here before us, the people were called Yuta by their friends the Shoshone and the Comanche Nootparka, or people that eat elk. There were 12 bands of nomadic people who hunted and gathered in the Rockies. For 9 millennia that we know of in the Roaring Fork Valley, and some whose history reaches back 14 millennia to the Clovis Point, found embedded in a mammoth rib in Clovis, New Mexico. The Yamparka, the Yampa root eaters. Yampa is a plant that looks like yarrow, I suppose. And Yuta, or Nootparka, that lived their lives in a great loop that encompassed land north of the San Juan Mountains to the Wyoming, Colorado, Montane, and from Moab to the Front Range. In harsh years, Nooch traveled south to the bottom of the Flagstaff Plateau. This is a land of the Nooch, a neutral place that accepted all people. This rugged and splendid reach, with which many of us know from our own explorations of discovery, was home and larger to a people that honed their survival skills and shaped the ecosystem to the point that living off the land was as easy as breathing. Every child learned to fill their needs by hunting and gathering from the lands around them. Time was abundant for Nooch, drawing deep culture and design from them, forging a people steeped with humor, strength, and courage. Over the millennia, they became one with the land, and the land in return became one with Nooch. So we're here today to celebrate Nooch and to celebrate what they've done, the land that we conquered, I guess. When we came into this land, it was a pristine wilderness. Our animals ate up all the food for the natural animals. Our farmlands took away the natural food that was here before. We shaped the land into what it is now, but we see that we have not done a good job in maintaining a natural environment, and we need to celebrate, we need to give gratitude to the people and the ways that maintain this land for an epoch to feed us and nurture us and bring us. And we need to get back to that somehow, some way, to gratitude and prayer for the planet. I thank Roland McCook for coming, and Albert and Ray. I don't know the names of our lady dancers.
Timber.
To Lisa and Timber for coming today and giving us their authenticity, giving us their tone of spirit that they use today and will continue into the future because they embrace their culture. Later on at lunch, I'm going to read the story of what led to what we call the Ute Massacre, but it's an interesting story, and it tells a little bit about our first and last encounters with the natural peoples. So welcome again, enjoy the sunshine, and the drumming will begin at some point. We're on reservation time. Roland, would you give us a blessing, please?
Good morning.
Are we glad to be here?
Yes.
Everybody that's not here, raise your hand. Okay. My name's Roland McCook. I'm from the Northern Ute Tribe. My people were the ones that were removed from Colorado, the Uncompahgres, and we are now located in the northeastern part of Utah, by Vernal, Utah. For those of you that know Utah, or that ever go to Utah for some reason, I don't know what that would be, but anyway. I was born and raised on the Uintah Ore Reservation. Both my parents are Uncompahgre Ute. And I speak Ute fluently. The last I heard, there was 3,200 members still on the reservation, and about 40% of us speak Ute. We're beginning to lose it because the younger folks are migrating into the cities where the jobs are. But there's still a healthy group on each reservation. The government, in its infinite wisdom, when they removed us from Colorado, split us into three different tribes. There's the Northern Ute, which is where I'm from, and then there's the Southern Ute, which is out at Ignacio, and then there's the Ute Mountain Ute, where my friends come from, Alfred Wall and his family. But they made it further. People will say, you know, if you people united, you could be a strong force. But I have been a chairman for my tribe for I served 9.5 years and was chairman for 2 years. I got a taste of that because the government made sure that our constitution and bylaws did not read the same. They're different, so we can't unite legally and government-wise. So we remain three different distinct tribes, but we speak the same language. The two tribes, the Southern Ute and Ute Mountain Ute, are the only tribes in Colorado. Ute tribes, but we gather every chance that we can to celebrate our own purposes. I've known Rita and John for like 7 years now, and I moved back to Utah and to Colorado. I retired here in Colorado, and I've been here for 11 years now in the Montrose area. But I continue to speak out for the Native Americans and the Utes. I've known John and Rita and others, Diana, for about 6 or 7 years now and worked with them. They're valiant people with hearts in a good place. They keep plugging along even when they seem to be the only ones standing there. And I stand with them, and I have every time. And so they brought this together. They asked me to come over, and I did a introduction and blessing here in Aspen last night. Then I hustled over here to do what we were doing last night for a little bit. There's a drum circle, prayer circle up in Newch Park. And then I promised I'd be here, even though the Aspen event is still going on, which I was invited to be. But I'm here with John, Rita, and Diana, and others. And so they deserve to have a good turnout. I wish there was more people that were more dedicated to history and people that were here. If this is it, then we'll have them missing out. And we're here. And our prayers will go up. But I just wanted to say those few words to you. In these mountains, yesterday I gave a statement at the Wheeler Opera Center building. I've been there several times throughout the years, so we'll just ask the Creator, Creator, I asked him to give us our blessing. as we are attached to this land where my people, laughed and enjoyed their lives, and they are gone now, and you are now the custodians of this land. You should treat it like we did. Make sure that it's taken care of, because the more you give to them, the mountains, the more it gives back to you. So you take care of your environment. And that's about what I said with the Creator. Thank you. And we have no program here, John. We just would go at, you know, it's Native American way. It's Indian time and Indian ways, and we'll do what we can here. So we just, you know, a lot of times it frustrates us sometimes when you look for, have a program and it's all written down from minute after minute after minute, and we just don't adhere to that. And we just go like the buffalo, just walk straight on. And so, and that's the way we're going to play this by ear. John, and Rita, and Diana, you guys are going to have to direct us some here, but we'll fill in where we're needed, okay? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, we normally do an opening song, an honor song to begin our events, and we have Alfred and his partner that will do it. And just take a minute, and they go down their top 10 list and their popular hits, and just have at it. And what we normally do is either a flag song, honor song, that kind of thing. And we expect that you would take your hats off, and because this is an honor song. And then we'll go on from there.
Just as a short aside, until 1964, it was illegal for them to practice their culture. It was illegal for them to sing. So this is recaptured. It was kept alive through a long period of repression.
Hey, oh, 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 hey, oh
I don't know if any of you have ever been to a powwow. It's an awesome experience, and one that you'd never forget easily. They have competitions. They'll have groups of eight people around tom-toms the size that you can't wrap your arms around. And the dancers are an incredible exhibit of the culture and intense craft that these people cultivate and utilize. We are very grateful for them to come today, and someday perhaps we'll be honored with the full powwow, but that's in the future, and we'll see. What do we want to do next? Anybody feel like beating on their tom-toms? All right. Heartbeat of the planet. We call the forces of life, and it's all alive. We call the forces of life so that we can express our gratitude, so that we can express our wonder and our joy at being able to participate in this. This is a unique planet. Nothing like it in our solar system. Nothing like it anywhere in the universe that our massive telescopes, that our science has uncovered. This is it. We need to enjoy what we have. We need to work with it. Not as lords over it, not as the dominion to conquer. But is life like our own? Appreciate it. Be gentle with it. With it. It's all worked together to give us the air that we breathe, the water that we drink, the food that we eat, the mountains that we enjoy, the oceans that we rely on. We've reached a point changing. The oceans have been absorbing as much heat as they can. They've absorbed the carbon dioxide to the point that it's breaking down the shells. The diatoms in the smallest animals form the foundation of life. Changes here. And we change with it. We'll recognize it and accept it. And we'll change our lives. As our lives will be changed. As the people have shown us their courage. As they have shown all our relations, we must accept all our relations. We can stop sending our sons and daughters to war. We can live our lives in peaceful acceptance of each other. Smile, because we have a lot to smile about. The sky above us, and our luck. I was noticing last night, Jupiter in the west, an arrow point that's been on the tip of Scorpio's tail all summer. Beautiful. Just on the other side of the Milky Way, Saturn, with Pluto sitting on its shoulder, an amazing sight that made Saturn sparkle. You don't get to see Pluto very often. You can't miss it now. It's a bump on the shoulder of Saturn. And we were lucky. A month ago, asteroid, the city killer, as they were described by the Australians. We missed it. NASA missed it. They never saw it coming. All our fancy satellites, all our fancy things to catch the things that are going to hit us. It came within 45,000 miles of us. One-fifth of the distance between here and the moon. We're lucky. Take it to our heart, compassion. I'm not sure what love is anymore, but I know what gratitude is. Opening my heart in appreciation, and I know that all that I feel gratitude towards, I love. Thank you. what our singing should be. Gratitude. Listening to the heartbeat of the planet, dancing to its rhythms, teaching our children to be aware, to appreciate, and our own appreciation of their joy. Single-celled animals, all the creatures that take in carbon dioxide and give out oxygen, have maintained the atmosphere with a ratio of oxygen to nitrogen, which is 70% of our atmosphere. 20.95% of our atmosphere is oxygen. Not 20.1, not 21%, 20.95%. A delicate balance that keeps us from burning if there's too much oxygen. And yet gives us enough brains to grow, for our body to have enough energy for us to do what we need to do as humans. A unique species on this planet. And who knows what else is out there? And who knows why we are what we are? It's going to be our gratitude that carries us through. Our carbon dioxide that we're spewing into the atmosphere now, it doesn't just heat up the planet, it steals our oxygen. At 500 parts per million, we become clumsy. Our thinking gets distorted. We make silly mistakes. If you happen to own a recreation center, like we do in town here, their fancy exhaust system is told to turn on at 500 parts per million. For the last 800,000 years, we've been at 250 parts per million. That we know of from scientific sampling. Ice cores 2 kilometers deep in Antarctica. We're at 413 and rising. Our help. solution is inside each one of us. How we live our lives, decisions we make, it's all personal. And always back to gratitude.
Yeah, I'd like to see you, people with the drums, really get after it, because I've seen it before. I was here, I open up the music festival here. I have done up for 3 years now, and there's a drum group that they just really go after it. I'd like to hear some of that today. But I'm here to say that to celebrate the Indigenous Day, the first one here in Carbondale. Many towns are starting to do that across the country. It all started from a group in Colorado Springs called the White Bison, their nonprofit group. What they were really after was an apology from the President of the United States to the Native Americans in general across the nation. And so they lobbied their congressman, and they came up with a bill, and they presented it to Washington, and it failed. It failed. No one really wanted to pay attention to it. It was an apology to say that the United States was sorry for the treatment of the Native Americans in relocation, boarding schools, and all of the failures that happened because of the Removal Act of the Native Americans. And so the next thing after it failed, the congressman attached the same bill to the military bill, making sure that it would pass with the military funding bill, and so it did. And it lies in Washington now, having been approved. President Obama, upon reading that decision, simply mentioned it, that the Apology Act had been passed, but that's all he said. And encouragement from Native Americans across the country did not make him do any more than that. And so, having been disappointed, the Native Americans got together and approached the United Nations with that bill, and requested the United Nations make a statement or what they could do within their parameters to the President of the United States. And having deliberated for about 2 or 3 months, the United Nations issued a statement to the president and said, it is only right that you do a formal apology to the Native Americans of the United States. And having received that, after another 2 or 3 months, the president finally answered and said, the United States does not answer to the United Nations on domestic values. And so he is not about to do that, and he finished his presidency without ever paying attention to that bill. And so it has come that because he failed to do so, that the states and communities across the United States took it upon themselves to do that very thing. And in Colorado, and I can only speak for Colorado because I've been involved with it, Telluride, the San Miguel County Commissioners took it up, and with my assistance, issued a proclamation to the Northern Ute tribe, the Uncompahgres, that had been removed from their area. And in the end, I made an appointment for Art Goodtimes, who was the chairman of the board, or the commissioners. And long story short, he stood on stage with about 150 Native Americans on the Uintah-Nori Reservation, and he said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all that has been happened to your people. And out of that became personal history and personal stories from individual youths about their great-great-grandfathers and how they had to endure the move from Colorado to the Uinten Ore Reservation, it became very emotional. And so that's what San Miguel County has done. And so in furtherance of that, he asked me what we could do further, and I said, you know, that's just how you feel and what you can, your community wants to. So far he has had the Ute Youth Skiing Program. They've come up to the ski lodges in Telluride and had free skiing days, things like this. And then we put on a celebration for Indigenous Day. In the morning, we had a plaque presented to the one of the communities in the community, and we had a lot of people show up. And at noon, we had a dance exhibition at Village Inn, where the town mayors and officials spoke, and that was really well attended. And in the evening, we had invited all of the three Ute tribal chairmen to come and speak at one of their opera houses, their theaters. And we had a full house in Telluride. And each individual tribe was represented by their chairman, and I was really, really gratified that they showed up. And I gave the opening statement, and what followed became very, very emotional as well. So a lot can be done by communities, and you're doing your part with people that are interested here. And in Salida, they asked me to come over and support them in the renaming of a mountain, which I named Chipita, and that got passed, and we're going to be celebrating that every year now. Little things like this, like Carbondale has dedicated the Nooch Park up along what used to be the bull pasture and the eagle sanctuary. Things like this that's noted by Ute tribes, as long as you're doing that. And Ure, town of Ure, dedicated a bust of Chief Ure, what it's named for, and I dedicated, in fact, Alfred was there. We closed off the streets and we had a little celebration to dedicate that, and that's the first, yeah, Alfred and his group came up and did that too. Alfred's been with me for quite a while. And so little places like that, and the communities across the nation are doing so, taking up the fight to recognize Indigenous Day and what we might have gone through. So I appreciate all of you that are here to do this Indigenous Day, so I want you to carry the load for some of this to celebrate today. I would like to see the drum group get up and do your circle, and then we'll have Alfred sing a round dance song and get you guys all involved, and we'll show you how that goes, okay? Let's just bear it out. It's not too bad of weather. It's pretty nice, in fact, except for the sun on those guys facing it. But that's personal choice. So it's just wisdom, you know. We get blamed for a lot of wisdom things that they say that Native Americans have, you know. I'll just tell you about a couple of. One of them is a rancher in the fall like this, with the winter coming on, decided to get a supply of wood. So he has got a truckload of wood, a couple of loads, and figured he had enough, but he got thinking, maybe it's gonna be bad. I'm gonna go ask that Indian who lives down the road here. They always know what's gonna go on. So he went down, Indian, what's the weather gonna be like? He said, it's gonna be bad. He said, oh, so he went back, got two more loads of wood, stacked all up, went back down, and Indian said, oh, really bad. And so he went back and got the third load, really, really doubled it up and got a big pile. So he just went back down to the Indian, asked the Indian, have I got enough wood? He said, oh, it's gonna be really, really bad, you know. He said, well, how do you know this? What gives you that knowledge? And what basis do you have to say that? He said, I've been watching you get all that wood. It's got to be bad. So, you know, and some of our stuff is factual. And one of those is, you know, the sad part of the government doing negotiations with the Ute tribes and mistaking their responses and taking action on our responses. One of those is very crucial that happened in our history. Our word when we negotiate or talk with anybody is an expression that says, continue, I agree with you, I'm in agreement with you. Come on, keep talking, let's keep talking. And that word expression is, to us, when you're talking to me, I understand what you're saying, I want you to continue, I say, Dawayak. Dawayak is an encouragement, thank you, an encouragement. But the main one is, Well, when the government was negotiating with our people would be seated like you are, and they would be making their spiel about what they're going to do with the Native Americans or the Ute tribe specifically. And our people would sit there and go, yeah. Well, that's the response this government guy got. So when he went back to his superiors, the government, he told them this, I gave them Indians all the chances to be able to talk to me about what I'm saying, and all they do is grunt. So let's just move on and remove them from Colorado, or put their rations here, something major, government action, because they said all we did was grunt. Well, that meant, yes, keep talking. Let's keep talking with this, you know. That's our way of expressing, of agreeing with you. They did not know that, and that's how some of the actions were taken to deal with the Native Americans across the country, is they just did not know the language that we speak. So really bad things happened because all we said was, which means yes, we agree, keep going, continue to talk. And they would cut off negotiations just saying that all we did was grunt. So misunderstandings that had ramifications across Indian country was based on misunderstandings of language. Our early, the Native Americans back east, their earliest contact with the ships, they blamed Count Columbus, but it wasn't Columbus, it was some other group that came close to the islands. And the first communication was done by sign language. The guys on the ship saw the Indians, saw the people on shore, and they were going like this, and the Indians on the shore was going like this. That's another misunderstanding. This time by the Native Americans, just gold. And so, misunderstandings. I get a kick out of some people asking me about Indian names in Colorado. Manitou Springs. It's a spiritual place. It's a, you know, it's a place where you want to go see Manitou Springs. Well, a documented story that I did on research, Native American history, has it that two groups of settlers came from the Colorado Springs area, and a band of Utes met them right on a ridge up there by Woodland Park. And they sat on their horses and stared at each other for a while. And then the white guy, rancher, or settler gets off his horse and comes over to the Indians. And he said, what do you people call these mountains? He was making gestures. Like, what do you people call this mountains? And the Utes sitting there, he said, in their own language, he said, these people are lost. So they need direction. So they said, Manitou. Manitou means that way. Go back. Manitou. So they wrote it down. Manitou Spring. Manitou. It is actually Manitou, and so it means go back. And so now you hear Manitou Springs, it's all glorified, and so things like that. Kochitupa Pass, Kochitupa, Kochitupa Pass, Kochitupa. There's a hot springs over there at Kochitupa, Kochitupa, and Pagosa, Pagosa. Things like that. Ibapong, Ibkaibavi, Kaibabab, Kaibab, Kaibavi. You know, there's just all different spellings, the phonic spellings for names in Colorado, and you go off on your own interpretations of that, and our Ute language can bring you back to what it really means. And so I have a little bit of that. Pakachupuk, there's a place called Pakachupuk, which is a lake down by Montrose. And the lake and the creek is called Cow Creek. So they call it Pakachupuk, which means water buffalo, water cow, or something. And it should be Kuchupach. Kuchupach would be Cow Springs, Cow Creek. Anyway, we have some fun with it when we read it, you know, but it's kind of like, there's some really bad ones too, but I'm not going to tell you them. So if the drum group wants to get up and have a circle, let's do it. I'd like to have you guys participate and do, and let us see what you're about, or else you can ask me some questions, you know, anybody here, and we're here to be part of your community and stuff. Yes.
Roland, as you're speaking, staying on your talk about mispronouncing the names of things that we do, there was a word, Nanama.
Uh-huh. Nanama is what we're doing together. It means together. Nanama. But that's just the short of it. Nanama, and then of course you gotta make it the modifications on it. Nanama kakai. Together we sing kakai. Nanama u ike. You know, it's a Nanama u ike means dance together, you know. Nanama nike. Nanama means together.
And Mike?
You guys, it's you guys say Mike. It's like the name Mike. Actually, it's Mike. Mike. Kind of a Q sound. Mike. It means hello. It's a greeting, a general greeting. You can say Mike was my friend, or just Mike means just hi. It's a greeting. It's kind of got a Q sound to it. Mike.
Is it a formal or informal?
Yeah, it's informal. You can just Mike. You say Mike Deutsch. Deutsch is man. Mike Deutsch. Mike Mamach woman. Mike Mamach. Yes.
Roland, could you share a native name for Mount Sopras?
I've been asked that before. Sopras is a, what was he? He was a surveyor.
He's a captain.
He was an engineer. And he did the maps in this area. He did the surveying. And that's who it was named after. But he was from back east. He was not a resident here. He came here under contract and he surveyed this country, this area. And they named that mountain after him. And we don't name everything. You know, everybody labels everything. You know, the society labels everything. And ours, you have to have a certain individual character about it for us to give it that name. I know of some mountains that's named by Indians. One is up there in Steamboat Springs. It's a yellow mountain. It's called Whiteley Peak. Our people called it Rowaner. Rowaner means yellow peak. They're yellow, just yellow mountain, Rowaner. And then there's Gweratinakavach, which you people call rabbit ears. Our people call it Gweratinakavach. And that's same place as rabbit ears. Very few places did we give them individual names, but we always use these mountains as a directional. As they would say, what the Kaib, you know, the big mountain, or Kaib Wunder, or Kaib, what the Kaib, they would be give it that character name as a sense of direction. But we didn't label each name or creek or anything. It had a general name, like this river would be Panquit, you know, a Watquit, big river, small river, not, but it was by the character of that feature, you know. But I know you label everything that you come across. Every creek has a name, every little knoll has a name, and every anyway, so it's okay. That's what society is, I guess. but we don't name, label everything except those that are really important to us. They have just, there's a mountain, a huge mountain that lies across the, this reservation. It's the Paiute Indians, Southern Paiute, and they call it Kai Avi, means the mountain alive, the mountain's lying there, you know, in your way of talking, but it's named Kai Avi. So when the government came to them and asked them what their tribe was, they just said Kai Avi, and then they called them Kaibab, and that's the Kaibab tribe of Indians. It means Kai Avi, and so that is, the Utes is not our name. That's not our name for us. The Utes came from when the Spanish and the Pueblos came into this area, into the Montrose and the area. The Pueblos called the people that lived there Utahs, Y-U-T-A-S, spelled by Spanish, Utahs. And so that's not our name for ourselves. And Utah got its name from that, but our name for ourselves, and we've called each other, is Nooch. Nooch. The proper grammar for that pronunciation is N-O-O-C-H. Nooch. Nooch. Not, you know, we spell it N-U-C-H, really. That's Nooch, right? According to your vocabulary and grammar. And so it's Nooch. And the proper spelling would be N-O-O-C-H, Nooch, and that's who we are. And we have different interpretations for what that means, but generally it means people. It refers to us as people of dignity, people of feelings, people that have those mysterious feelings that come from the same as you do, your heart. Our heart comes just like the sun rays, it's constant, the rain, the wind is a constant feeling of what you call love. What you know, there's no, we can't say love in our language because ours is different. And when you, and once we say Nooch, it addresses me as a person of substance. Nooch, Nooch you, Nooch individually, Nooch you, plural. See, and so that puts them in that category of being a person of dignity, proud, and just really prideful people. That's who we are. And that's what Nooch to me means, that we are as people. People of the earth. People who live with the earth, who appreciate the earth. So when you say Ute to us, that's your word. That's a dictionary for us. But our we call ourselves Nooch. When we talk about each other in our reservations on a daily basis, that's how we refer to each other. When we're talking Ute, we say Nooch, Nooch you. We don't say Ute unless we're talking your language. So there's real separation in your language. As I said before, there's a, when you say love, we really have no word for love except for Pimpichia, which means a whole different thing. It means from inside of them that we have them deep feelings for you. And that's our word for love, but it isn't love like you, you know, you people say love, but you love everything. You know, I love the weather, you know, I love that dog, you know, I love that horse, I just love that dog, you know, I just love, everything is love, you know, you love everything. But our words is being to a person to person, and so we don't throw that love around very easily. It has to have that real meaning to us. And you know, people ask me, how do you say love? And I say love. I don't have love like you can say it. It's deeper for us. It means much, much more. So that's a kind of true.
Yes.
I came a little late, so I'm sorry if you already answered this. But I wonder if there are opportunities. Do you or other folks from Native American local groups do courses on your culture or your language for the general public?
That's the downfall of the education department. I do lectures across Colorado on Ute history and Indian history in general. And I'm asked that several times, but I'll give you a good example. People ask me, school systems asked me when I first came here, if I could speak to their kindergarten or their elementary grades. Well, I entertained that for a while. I would come to like a fourth grade students, and I would talk about the youths as we are. The attention level is limited, and then when I open it up for questions, they ask me these questions, okay? And this is where where education department is really, really lacking. They ask me, do you still kill people? Do you still scalp people? Do you still hunt buffalo? Do you live in teepees? Do you use tomahawks? Do you use spears? Well, these are fourth grade and up. Where's the education to make them, let them know that we're just people like you? You know, and it really discourages me, because now I've given it up, because, you know, I just wish that there were teachers that would get them to the level that I could speak to those kids about who we really are and not answer questions like that. In fact, we had at the county fair in Grand Junction, we had a promotional table for the nonprofit group that I headed up. And about a 12-year-old, maybe 14-year-old girl with her mother approached the table, and we had a display of powwow dancers on the table. And she came up to the table and asked, what are those? And one of our people answered her and said, those are powwow dancers, they're Native American. And she looked up at her mom and said this, Mom, I thought we killed them all. That is where we are with education. And it takes me and a whole bunch of people to bridge that gap.
How horrible that must be for you, but I wonder if there were classes at like the community college level, if we could begin with young adults and adults, then maybe slowly but surely the message would get out.
It would have to be a concerted effort by a college or a teaching institute to make that a subject, because in general, you people don't know, but this is the least amount of people that I've seen at a gathering in a rural area. Normally, there's 100. In Buena Vista, I had 200 people show up in my talk. In Salida, out the door. In Peonia, out the door. No, I mean, there's crowds go out or trying to get in. But there has to be the interest. And this community, this is what you see is what is here for the support of Native American celebration. And so until we get better, and it's not your fault, it's not anybody's fault, except that you have people coming into your communities from outside that don't have the emotions that your great-great-grandfathers had when they came here, and you're the offsprings of that. And so you have history behind you, and you're willing to talk about it and explore those. Where larger cities, you can't even get a crowd. Grand Junction, 15 or 16, no, they were mostly my people. Montrose, 12. Delta, 15. But cities don't have time for history. Outlying communities do. And if you guys could schedule, and I've spoken at the Third Street Center here, and I would guess about 20, 30 people. Yeah, on just youth history and what I'm talking about here. So the people that are moving into your areas are not interested because they're not from here, or their grandparents aren't from here either. So they bring their own ideas into it, and it's not cohesive with yours. So I guess that's how we're moving on. But we're going to keep doing what we do. Native American sounds here, you're listening to music and drum beat that that's a regional. You know, Alfred's a singer from way back, and he took time to come here to do this with you. There are celebrations taking place where else he could have been. There's powwows taking place today in other places, but we chose to be here with you.
I just want to say thank you so much, and it hurts my heart that you've been separated from what's going on in Aspen, and I'm sorry that it's not more lively here, and I hope that changes. And the Alfred's song was so beautiful, and I just wonder if you could say a little about what he was singing.
That's a good point. Before I do that, I want to tell you that the way that I'm dressed, you will see this same in photos of the 1800s. This is all original, traditional dress that I'm wearing. And so are these here. The ladies are dressed in their traditional manner. And you'll see that in the 1800 photos, the way they're dressed. So we bring to you the traditional way. And when we sing, it's like when you hum. When you hum your songs and leave the words out, that's what we do. We hum it, and there is a pattern to it. Alfred is the lead singer. His voice goes first. We'll do this to demonstrate that in a minute. But his voice goes solo, and he's the leader, and he sets the songs that's going to be sung. He pulls it out of his brain. It's not written down. It's just all in his head. And he kind of like picks it out for the occasion. And so when he sings, he'll be the first one to sing, and he'll sing the high note. And then the second will be picked up by his assistant. He will pick up, and they will both join the rest of the song. And it's a hum, where you people say words, we hum. And it's kind of like the mountains. The first part goes high, and it follows the mountain and comes down into the river systems and the creeks, and then it picks up on the other side of the river or creek and comes up just a little ways, and then it goes back down again and ends in a long plain into the lower elevations of the mountain range. And that's as good as I can tell you, because that's just the way I featured it. And we'll sing his song. He'll sing a good powwow song here, and you will notice that when he does, he'll be the first, and it'll go up high. And then when it starts to come down, his assistant will pick it up, and they'll both join together, and it's humming a certain tune. And it'll follow in cascades of the mountain coming down into the river bottoms, and then back up again for the plateaus, its lower mountains, end up in the lower plains. So Alfred, give him a good powwow song, and we'll illustrate that.